Welcome to the Illuminating Primary Care Podcast, a general practice podcast brought to you by Menlo Park Recruitment. Illuminating Primary Care is here to quiz primary care leaders to offer professional knowledge, experience, and insight on the biggest topics in general practice. It's the podcast to listen to if you work in primary care. Welcome to the Illuminating Primary Care Podcast.
Hello and welcome to today's episode of Illuminating Primary Care, the Menlo Park podcast. My guest today is a multi-award winning wellbeing resilience trainer, an independent management consultant, a leadership coach, a senior fellow medical leadership and management, a chief executive of Manage Your Mind, and has also received the title of an MBE for services to mental health. And that is Dr. Farnaz Sharif. Thank you for joining me today, Farnaz. How are you?
Hi, Kieran. Thanks for having me. It's good to see you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So could you please give our listeners who maybe aren't connected with you on LinkedIn or maybe haven't heard of your work a little bit of background about yourself?
Sure. So I work as a GP. I've also had various leadership positions in the NHS over the years, and these have varied from being a clinical advisor to being on a governing body. My most recent role was that of a place-based medical director. And it's really, you know, in these positions that I've understood how important it is for each of us to look after ourselves and look after the wider teams of people that we work with. There's so much, stress out there, and the pressures are relentless, particularly this time of year. So it's great that we've got an opportunity to talk about something that I'm incredibly passionate about, and I think something that is also important for a lot of us to be thinking about, which is how we maintain our well-being, our resilience, whilst we do all the wonderful things that we do. And I'm sure you'll agree that healthcare professionals in general, particularly those who work on the front lines, have a lot of responsibilities, right? We're juggling hundreds of different things. The demands on our energy, on our attention are endless. And I found this with practically all the roles that I did. So it's great that we've got an opportunity to talk about, you know, how we recognize that, how we manage that, and sort of prevent that burnout as much.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Fantastic. So for our listeners who are used to listening to the podcast, as I've mentioned, you and I have discussed some topics that we want to raise attention to today. So I'll just jump straight in with the first of these. So what we've said we'd have a chat about is a brief overview of the scale of the problem that is stress and burnout across health and social care. So could you tell our listeners a little bit more about that and kind of what your thoughts are on the grand scale of that at this point?
Sure. Well, I think there's, before the pandemic, there was a BMA survey that was carried out that found that a third of doctors who responded at the time were burnt out. And I think the greatest specialities that were impacted was general practice and A&E.
Okay.
And then following the pandemic, pressures across health and social care really increased. They increased dramatically. And as a consequence, I think that impacted significantly on stress in the workplace because staff left, you know, there were significant workforce shortages, and those that were left behind were working harder for longer periods. There were funding pressures, there were winter pressures, and all of these have adversely affected on our wellness, contributed to increasing amounts of stress in the workplace. And I think post-pandemic, there was a health and social care committee report that highlighted that 92% of acute trusts had concerns about their staff well-being, which is very significant, I think.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's interesting to hear that you mentioned it was mainly GPs and A&E doctors. Or any clinicians, because I think a lot of people for the pandemic aspect of things, you know, you hear a lot about the hospital scenarios, but I think not necessarily that they're forgotten, but you almost don't give the same amount of thought to GPs, you know, in that time frame, shall we say. Is that something you've found, that GPs are sometimes forgotten about in that respect?
Well, I think there's certainly more attention coming to primary care in terms of sort of addressing well-being in the workplace. You know, well-being is part of the GP contract now. And if you think about it, primary care is the front door to the NHS. We see about, you know, 90% of patient contacts across the NHS, approximately 90%, occur in a primary care setting. So that importance to how staff function in that particular environment is incredibly important. And I'm glad now that it's part of the GP contract. And you can see from practices and PCNs across the country that people have taken some very innovative approaches to addressing well-being in the workplace because we are the front door to the NHS. And it's important that we do maintain our wellness whilst we deal with you know, patients that are coming through and all the other challenges that we experience.
Absolutely. Fantastic. Okay. I think it's also interesting what you've mentioned there, Fanaz, about a third of GPs said that, responders to the BMA that was put out, said that they were feeling burnt out. I mean, it's a massive number, really, when you think about it. And it's scary to think that has been the case, and I would imagine it's probably only got worse.
Yeah, I think post-pandemic it probably has. And remember, this is also people that have responded to the survey. There may be others out there that haven't had an opportunity to respond to the survey. But if you look at other factors, like it's one of the sources of support that we have is practitioner health. And I think, I can't remember the figures exactly, but the numbers of people accessing practitioner health for support have increased as well post-pandemic. So, you know, burnout is out there, people are stressed, but I think more and more people are recognizing that they're stressed and wanting to do something about it, which is why they're accessing support through the means that we have available as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's so important to do something about it. Okay, so another point that we'd mentioned we wanted to discuss was how stress and burnout impacts staff and delivery of services. What can you tell our listeners a little bit about that from your insight?
Well, I think when people are stressed, when they're tired, when there's high levels of burnout, when people don't feel good or well enough to go to work, then they don't go to work. Or they can't go to work. And these high absences or their ability to function effectively at work impacts on the work that they do, right?
Yeah.
So oftentimes you might find that staff satisfaction rates drop. And I think it was the King's Fund that did a piece of work where they found that high levels of stress or burnout in the workplace have adverse effects or have poorer outcomes, rather, for patients. And it also costs the NHS. I think it was Health Education England that found that poor mental health equates to around about £2,000 per employee per year for time taken off work, which is, again, quite significant.
Yeah. If you look,
the levels of stress across health and social care, how it impacts on not just the individual, but their teams, you know, on the patients that we serve, and it also costs the NHS quite a significant amount per person.
Wow. I didn't realise it was such a significant amount per person.
Yeah.
Right, okay. And is that kind of across primary care, secondary care, social care, things like that?
I think they looked at it as an average.
Okay.
Piece of work that was done by Health Education England, and the detail around that might be available on their website. But I think on average, it's around about £2,000 per employee per year.
Wow. Gosh, again, that's quite a startling statistic in that respect. So it really can affect delivery of services then, you know, if people are having to have time off, you know, and be signed off from work, whether they're clinicians or even management staff or reception staff, you know, whoever it may be. I mean, it's no secret that primary care, you know, which is more kind of Menlo Park's area, it is a stressful environment. I think anybody you ask about that, you know, it's not an easy job. And that's why it's so important that, you know, people who are finding roles in that sector see it as a vocation as opposed to just the means to an end, you know, to pay the bills and that sort of thing. But yeah. It's quite startling to hear a statistic like that.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, I think the opposite is also true, that when people feel good, when they are mentally and emotionally, I suppose, happier and in good places, then the opposite happens. There's less turnover, there's less happiness. You know, as you say, people are happier in their roles. And as a consequence, outcomes for the individual, for the teams and the patients that they serve are better as well.
Yes.
Right? And I think that wellness, to me, isn't just about feeling good. It's about how that goodness impacts on what we do.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, it's a ripple effect in that respect, isn't it? Yeah, excellent. Okay. So in terms of when people are feeling the beginning of burnout or the first signs of it, what do people need to look out for to recognize stress and burnout in the workplace, do you think?
I think there's a couple of things. Everybody's different, right? Mm. And everybody sort of exhibits signs and symptoms of stress in different ways. But in most cases, when we're sort of proactively looking out for signs and symptoms of stress, some things that you might want to look out for is uncharacteristic behavior in your colleagues, right? So someone who's normally bubbly and excited and full of energy is the complete opposite, or perhaps people are less productive than usual, or maybe they look a bit tired, or they're not eating as much as they do. You know, they keep skipping their meals, or they're not as motivated as they usually are in the workplace. There's also, you know, folks that might take a lot of time off work, or they're not as social as they usually are. Or sometimes stress, you know, people appear anxious, or they might be a bit restless. And in some cases as well, you know, sometimes if there's smokers, they might be smoking a little bit more, or drinking a bit more. Things like that, I think, are the things to be mindful of when it comes to recognizing or spotting the signs.
So it could be something that's quite subtle. As you say, it might be that somebody's maybe not quite as productive, or it could be something that's quite drastic in the sense of, you know, a complete personality shift.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's, you know, the thing about teams that work very closely together is you sort of get to know each other really well, right?
Yeah.
And you're working in a very high stress environment. So sometimes these alarm bells do go off and you sort of think, oh, you know, so-and-so's not as full of energy as they usually are. Or I've noticed, you know, that they haven't had their meals as often as they do. Or they perhaps have got dark circles under their eyes or not looking as well as they do. These are the things that you might want to sort of stop and say, actually, you know, is everything okay? How are things going? And pick up on that as early as possible.
Okay. So there's very much kind of that team mentality there, and that you've got to look out for those people around you, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely.
And what about on more of kind of an individual level, is the things that you think people can try and notice in themselves to be a precursor to stress and burnout?
Yeah, very. I think, you know, there's two, I think, fundamental things when it comes to our well-being that sort of form the foundation of our resilience. And the first is food and water, and the second is sleep. And I think when those two start to slip for an individual, they may be things that you want to sort of address as early on as possible. Because food is, you know, the amount of food that we eat, the quality and the quantity of food that we eat is so important to our well-being. And if we're not eating right, if instead of having your regular, well-balanced, healthy meal, you're sort of reaching out for Snickers bars or, you know, things that aren't that good for you, that they're going to compound on our well-being and our resilience. And similarly with sleep, you know, if you're not sleeping well as an individual, if you're waking up and you're getting lots of thoughts, then you don't recharge, right? Sleep is about how we recover from the challenges that we deal with on a daily basis. And if that is affected, then as an individual, I'd be like, actually, maybe I do need to sort of step back and, you know, think about what's going on here so that I am recovering from everything that I do on a daily basis.
I think it's that catalyst almost. If you look after yourself, other things will around you will be benefited by that, and then the people around you and the work you're doing, and it, as I mentioned earlier, it's that ripple effect, isn't it?
Yeah. There's a really beautiful quote that I love by a lady called Marianne Williamson, and she says that the ego says, when everything falls into place, I'll find my peace, but the spirit says, when I find my peace, everything will fall into place. So you're right, it's about us feeling good. It's about the individual finding their peace, being comfortable, you know, being happy, being mentally and emotionally resilient. That comes first. And then, you know, dealing with the challenge comes second. And we're much better positioned to deal with our challenges when we feel good.
Absolutely. And I think another important point to touch on is potential solutions to stress and burnout. I know we'd mentioned that, and we will come on to the work that you've been doing specifically in the Kent and Medway area, but is there anything in particular kind of on a general scale, Fanaz, that you think it's worth mentioning to our listeners, whether it's, you know, a solution to this for themselves or to colleagues or friends or family even?
Yeah, sure. I think with solutions, I tend to group them into solutions for the individual and then solutions for, you know, the workplace.
Okay.
So with people, I think, you know, as we talked about, that the two most important things are the food that you eat and how well you're sleeping. And if you can nail that, then you've got the energy that you need to be able to deal with all the responsibilities that you have. Food is, you know, there's so much out there when it comes to food and what's healthy and what isn't. And I always say that as a general rule, you know you're on the right track when you eat and drink what your great-grandmother would have eaten and drunk, right? So the fruits, the vegetables, all the colorful stuff that grows from the ground. If you've got a healthy amount of that in your diet and you're having, you know, 2 to 3 liters of water a day, so depending on the temperature and stuff, then you're good, that you've got that energy to do what you need to. And then again, sleep, right? We're 100 miles per hour during the day. And often when we get to bed, where it's most people, or some people still scroll on their phones or check their emails or on social media and then put that away and then try to go to sleep. But it's very difficult to be 100 miles per hour and then try and get a good night's sleep. So a couple of hours before actually getting to bed, it's really important to let the mind slow down, right? And okay. I always say, general rule of thumb for individuals, if you can change the quality of the first hour of your morning, then the quality of the rest of your day improves. So first morning is a good time to exercise, meditate, you know, do something that motivates you, gives you that energy, a good breakfast, you know, start your day off with a nice sort of healthy chunk of sunlight and some water that just, and then if you want to improve the quality of your sleep, change the quality of the last hour of your evening.
Okay.
And that's a good time to, you know, warm bath, read a book, avoid violent TV programs, or, you know, do something that's going to allow your mind to settle down, meditate just before going to bed, stuff like that. So for individuals, I think really pay attention to your food, how much you're hydrating yourself, the quality of your sleep, so important. These are basic essentials, but absolutely fundamental to give us the energy that we need.
Absolutely. Okay, it's really interesting to hear that as well, because I've had conversations with a fantastic chap called Matthew Flynn, and he's done talks with Menlo Park as a business and many other businesses and individuals, and he's talked about nutrition and sleep and stress and things like that, and it's always incredibly insightful. And he'd mentioned, similar to you, in the build up to that time of before going to sleep, it's really important that you try and reduce screen time at least, and you know, try and relax, and you know, if you get your bedroom to a certain temperature, that will help, and having a hot shower before you go to sleep, things like that. So it's really interesting. I think that's kind of almost, for want of a better expression, a universal thing. You know, take time to look after yourself and unwind before you go to sleep. But it's really interesting to hear what you've mentioned about the morning and how that can affect the quality of your day. Because I know some people, they'll try and lie in as long as they can. Some people, they don't want to do exercise first thing. They'd rather wait until after work. And then I know that sometimes the quality of their exercise is affected because they're tired and they don't really want to go to the gym, or they don't really want to go for that run. So to hear that that's a really important factor as well is really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's, you know, every individual is different, right? Some people prefer to exercise in the evening rather than the morning and stuff. But I'd encourage listeners to give this a shot and see how they feel. Change the quality of the first hour of your morning. You know, do what really motivates you, what you're really passionate about at that particular moment in time. There's lots of people that have come onto the program and they spend time just cuddling their kids or, you know, watching the sunrise with a cup of coffee. And it's small, simple things that actually make a huge difference.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting you say that, actually, because if I use myself as an example, normally if I'm working in the office, I'll get up about six-ish, get ready. I'm normally out of the house by 6:30. I'm in the office for 7. I'll go to the gym, have a shower, and that sets me up for my day. That's kind of the routine. And then in the spring and summer months where it's lighter mornings, I normally, if I'm working from home, I'll get up and go for a walk. And, you know, that's the thing I'll do first thing, come back, have a shower and start working. But it's really interesting because when it gets darker and it's not as appealing to go out and go for a walk, I'll try and do some other form of exercise, but it's not always as easy and you don't feel like your heart's in it as much. And the other morning, for example, I did Lego before work. I got a Lego project on the go at the minute, just did an hour of Lego before I started work. And I think, like you say, if you do things you enjoy, because I did think, oh, I'm not doing exercise, I'm not going to get the blood pumping and get myself going. But I had a really good, successful working day after that because I did something I enjoyed first. So it's interesting to hear that. Is there anything in particular you'd recommend on the darker months? Because I know that sometimes it can be factors like take vitamin D tablets, you know, when people aren't getting as much sunlight. But is there anything else you'd recommend to really get the most out of your morning in that case?
You know, the darker months, I have to admit, it is hard to get out of bed, right? But it's when the sun starts rising, a walk at that time or a run or getting yourself out of the house at that particular moment in time is really good because you get that bolus of sunlight. Yeah. And at least 20 to 30 minutes. In fact, there's some research that's been done that suggests is that the man by the name of Andrew Huberman, you know, folks are welcome to look him up. And research suggests that that bolus of sunlight when the sun is just coming up, even if it is cloudy, if you're outside for 20 to 30 minutes walking or just, you know, out there soaking it in, it makes a huge difference. It gets that your sort of circadian rhythms going, and it lets your body and your mind know that it's, you know, the sun's up and it's time to work, and it actually makes a huge difference. And some kind of physical activity, you don't have to run or anything, but even if you're taking a walk, you know, a light jog or a brisk walk, that makes a huge difference.
Okay.
People mostly find that it's hard to get out of bed, but once you're up and you're out, you know, you're fine. That's what that's the feedback that I've got from most people. So it's just getting up that's a little bit challenging sometimes.
Yeah.
But once you're up, it's good.
Yeah. Absolutely. Fantastic. And I think it'd be really good if you could give our listeners a little bit of an insight into the work you have been doing specifically kind of around Kent and Medway and with Manage Your Mind as well.
Yeah. So Manage Your Mind is a program I've been running for many, many years. I ran it in the community initially and post-pandemic. It's, you know, we've really been focusing on the health and social care staff. So in a nutshell, it's a program that uses some very practical principles. So we talk about things like responsibilities and dealing with conflict, internal conflict and, you know, sort of external conflict things like acceptance, you know, some of these common principles that we all encounter on a daily basis, but in a very practical way. We sort of approach them in a very practical way. And that's coupled with some very powerful breathing exercises that people can apply in the moment. And I think that's what's really unique about this program is what you learn can be applied, you know, when you're at work, when you're in a challenging meeting, when you're having a difficult discussion. And applying these principles changes how people then think and feel in that moment. So if you find that you're feeling a bit stressed or overwhelmed, if you sort of apply some of these principles, you can change that state you're in, that energy state that you're in. And when you feel a little bit better and your mind's a little bit clearer, you can then think about what it is you need to get done. So in a nutshell, that's what the program's about. It's very practical, it's very experiential. And we had the course evaluated, independently evaluated by the University of Kent, and they used some internationally validated questionnaires. And they found that when people practice these techniques on a regular basis, their levels of stress and emotional exhaustion dropped. And wellness amongst individuals improved quite significantly. I think it was 71% increase in wellness.
Wow.
And about 66% reduction in stress and emotional exhaustion.
And over how long a period was that?
So the course at the time was, it varies, it was either 2 days or 3 days. And we evaluated people before they came onto the program, and then afterwards, it was about a week or so before they came on, and then about a week or so after they completed it. And then we also had some sort of focus groups. Again, these were done independently, and this was a few weeks after this, you know, after the participants had completed the program. And we got a lot of softer feedback from folks, and it was great because people felt more confident in their jobs and they felt more fulfilled in their job roles. I remember feedback I got from a GP colleague of mine, and she said, "Work hasn't changed, but we have."
Okay.
And I really like that because it is, it's about changing mindset, right? And it's, it, I think that when you change the way you look at things, then the things you look at change. Right. And I think that's really what the program is about.
It's similar to the adage of attitude determines outcome.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I think if you give yourself the tools and the opportunity to improve or better your own mental health, you see the world slightly differently, I suppose. Like you say, even if things around you don't change, you have a different way of viewing them. I mean, I'm a big believer myself in that attitude determines outcome. I think if you go into anything, no matter whether it's daunting or stressful, if you go into it with the right attitude, it can make it a lot easier, you know, if you try and be positive about it. I know it's not always possible and it's not always everybody's preference or easy for people to do at all, but it's something that I think is really important to at least try to do. So it's interesting to hear that it makes it almost that bit more achievable. You know, you're not trying to change the world around people. You're trying to help them see a different way of looking at it. Would you say that's right?
Yeah, it's about changing the inner world so that you're better equipped to deal with the outer world. I think that's what it's about. And you're right. It's, you know, there's another expression I know, and I use quite frequently on the courses actually, is to a person who's jaundiced, everything appears yellow. Right? So if someone is low, or if someone is just naturally angry or frustrated, it's very difficult to get them out of that space sometimes. But if they do techniques that help them, that help shift their energy, help shift their mindset, you know, it's a physiological process as well, right? To start feeling better, to get the energy levels up. And when that happens, then the outlook changes. And when the outlook changes, then the outcomes change too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And what was it in particular that made you want to start Manage Your Mind? Was there a particular event, or had you found these things affecting yourself? What was it that kind of gave you that nudge to make a go of it?
You know, I did a course through a charity many, many years ago after I qualified. And this was, 23 years ago, just after I qualified from med school. Very challenging time for me. And I did a sort of course based in breath work.
Okay.
And it made a huge difference. And actually, I didn't realize the difference it made to me. My mom noticed the difference it made to me. All of a sudden, she was like, "What is wrong with you? You know, why are you so happy?" And I was like, "What?" And it was, you know, she said, "Look, you're coming home from, you know," I was working in Zimbabwe in Africa at the time. She's like, "You're coming home after a 24-48 hour shift. You know, you're not annoyed, you're not frustrated, you're not tired, you're spending time with the family, you're cooking, you know, it's nice to be around you. And what's going on?" So I was like, "Oh my God, I did this program and I've been practicing these techniques and I've been doing them for about 6 weeks. And I guess that's what's making me feel good." And it was the first time I realized how my stress impacts on the people that I love the most. You know, and I hadn't realized that when I come home annoyed or angry or frustrated, that the people that I live with, the people that I love, are also impacted by that. But when I come home feeling good and, you know, I'm in a better place, then people around me pick up on that too. Mm. And that was a huge, huge shift for me. And I thought, "Oh my gosh." And I can see it. I can see it in people that I've worked with over the years. I can see the stress out there. You know, I can see it when we have meetings and, you know, we have challenging discussions. And, you know, you can see the energy go up. You can see it drop. And I think life is really long, right? And it's important for us to live that life feeling fulfilled, feeling passionate, enjoying what we do. And, you know, we all have our ups and downs. And, of course, our most difficult times teach us the most valuable lessons. But it's about coming out of that with that learning, with that skill, you know, to move forward in a meaningful way. And I'm really passionate about that, you know, and I see people that are struggling around me. I really want to make that difference and say, "Look, there's things that you can do, and actually they're not that difficult, you know, changing your breath, making sure you're eating right, sleeping okay, things like that." As I say, small things making a huge difference.
Mm. I think that's the thing, isn't it? It is just a case of these various small things that when added together make a big difference. And I know we hear that about, you know, many, many things these days, and I don't wish to make it sound like a cliche at all, but in conversations I've had about mental health and stress and burnout and things like that, it's really, really interesting, because it does seem to be everybody saying the same thing, and that, you know, it is these small checks. Because I think sometimes when people feel stress and burnout, they might think, "Oh, you know, everything's awful. I'm this, I'm that, I need to have this long period of time off work." And in some cases, of course, that may be what's needed. Yeah. But it's really interesting to hear that. I think if you are starting to feel that, and as you've mentioned earlier, you know, the signs to look out for, whether it's in yourself or somebody else, implementing these small changes can help make a big difference. And going off what you mentioned there about how your mother commented on things, the fact that you had such a big difference that your mum would think there's something wrong with you in the fact that you changed so much in 6 weeks, like that to me seems quite a short space of time to have such a major difference, because a lot of these different things, I think particularly when it comes to physical wellness, you know, when people have targets in the gym or they want to lose weight, that can take months, if not years in some cases. So for something that's as important as mental health, and just by implementing these small changes in these techniques that you've mentioned, For such a major difference in the space of about 6 weeks, that seems fantastic to me.
Yeah. And, you know, practicing it every day. And I think this is the thing, you know, using the gym analogy, if you do want a great pair of biceps, if you're going to flex once a week, it'll make a little bit of a difference and you probably will get to where you need to. But if you're going to flex that muscle every day, or several times a day, then you're going to get there faster. And that's the unique thing about the breath, is when you learn some breath work, you don't have to be a member at a gym or get up and leave the room or do anything. You know, you can practice it in the moment when you feel anxious, when you feel stressed. You can change the way in which you breathe. Simple things like just sitting up and putting your palms on your thighs, you know, the practices that we teach on the program, you can do that. I mean, I sometimes, if I find that my energy is dropping or if I feel, okay, this is a bit of a challenge, just changing the way in which you sit changes things physiologically and allows you to embrace the challenge rather than want to sort of, you know, shy away from it. And it's these things, when you do them, when you start doing things, you know, it's a bit harder because you're embedding it and it's new. But when you've practiced it, you know, every day or so for a couple of weeks, then it becomes who you are. You know, you just go to it naturally, it's reflex. And I think that's the unique thing about the breath, is it just, once you've learned it, you're just like, okay, I need to do this, I feel better, right, let's move on.
How long do you think it takes for these sorts of behaviours to become habitual for people?
I think it varies depending on the individual. And it's like a, you know, like when a plane takes off, the first 3 minutes or the first 5 minutes, it uses the most amount of energy to get, most power rather, to get to that place where it then levels off and then flies at a certain height. So similarly, when you're learning new techniques, you know, you use the most amount of effort for a certain period of time, and that can sometimes be a couple of weeks. But once you've got it and you've practiced it and you know that, okay, I'm feeling stressed, I need to practice my breathing, or I need to do this or I need to do that, then you sort of level off and it becomes, you know, it becomes something that you naturally go to. It's like brushing your teeth, right? You know, when we were kids, we'd be told to brush your teeth, you've got to do this, you've got to do that. But now it's just natural. You don't think about it, you just do it. So it's a very similar thing when it comes to learning these types of techniques. In fact, I don't know if you can put a link at the bottom of this podcast, but there's two breathing techniques I'd recommend. You can look them up on YouTube. One is called the box breathing. People may be familiar with it already. It's really simple, really, really easy to do if you look it up on YouTube. And then there's another one called the straw breath. I can share the links with you as well. You're welcome to pop them on.
Yeah, that'd be brilliant. I'll add them to the footnotes, definitely.
Yeah, and people can practice these. They're very easy to do. I'll share the YouTube links with you, and you'll find that they help. But, you know, folks are also welcome to look up Manage Your Mind if they're interested, or you know, we can have conversations around how to support them.
Fantastic. Wonderful. Well, I think that's really nicely kind of rounded off everything we wanted to discuss today, Firnaz. So is there anything else you'd like to particularly mention to our listeners on this topic or anything else at all?
Yeah, I think we've covered quite a lot. I think the one thing I would say is it's so important to be kind to ourselves. You know, it is tough. We all have a beautiful responsibility when it comes to serving our patients, working with our teams. And it's, you know, so many of us work with a lot of passion, a lot of commitment, a lot of dedication, and often forget to look after ourselves because we're so passionate about making a difference for, you know, the people that we serve. I encourage folks to maybe just pause and think about looking after yourselves too, in hopefully using some of the things that we've talked about today. But really be kind to yourselves, you know, get a good night's sleep, eat the right foods, use your breath to make a difference if you feel a bit, you know, wobbly at work. And yeah, be kind to yourself.
Absolutely. I think going off what you mentioned earlier as well with regards to, you know, starting your day off right, if it's not exercise, then do something you're passionate about, do something you love. And I think it's really important that people make the most of days off and things like that to rest and recover and, you know, take care of themselves, but also to pursue their hobbies and passions and interests and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wonderful. That's brilliant. Well, thank you so much for your time. Really do appreciate it. And where can our listeners get in touch with you or find you to follow you on social media?
So I most commonly use LinkedIn. You're welcome to find me on LinkedIn, Fanaz Sharif. And if you go on to our website, manageyourmind.org.uk, and then I have another website as well, fanazsharif.com.
Wonderful.
So either of those is absolutely fine.
Fantastic. That's brilliant. Well, yeah, thank you very much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Great. Thanks a lot, Kieran. Lovely to see you.
And
thanks
you.
For the opportunity.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Illuminating Primary Care Podcast. If you enjoyed our podcast, please subscribe, review, and share so others can find the podcast too. We really appreciate your support. If you're a practice looking to recruit permanent clinicians, such as GPs, nurses, or allied health staff, please get in touch at menloparkrecruitment.com or email james@menloparkrecruitment.com. For daily primary care news, please follow Menlo Park Recruitment on LinkedIn. Thank you so much for listening, and we hope you'll join us next time for another episode of the Illuminating Primary Care Podcast.